Μένα μόλα, 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 τα ενταλάντα ζήσει αγίτη ασύνε. Ρουμίνια, 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 Φαργινίγου, βόλτα η άρθρο και κλείσα στην κυκέντο κρίγου. Αμα μαλίγελε, απαστρώμαλε, ακαρνάτσαλε, την αγλέζαλε.
Hello again, I'm your host Adrian Iosifescu, and this is the third episode of the History of the Romanian Jews podcast. Today we will review the life of Jews in the 17th and 18th centuries in the Romanian principalities of Moldova and Wallachia. Romania, and therefore the Jewish community in Romania, was always at the junction of great empires and civilizations in a multicultural and multi-religious area. It was at the boundary of Catholic, Orthodox, and Islamic space, at the crossroads of Habsburg, Tsarist, and Ottoman empires, under the influence of the three cultural poles, Vienna, Petersburg, and Istanbul, somewhere between the central, eastern, and southeastern Europe. It is said that by 1843, an Englishman from the Royal Geographic Society did some math and concluded that the center of Europe was geographically located in a shtetl on the Prut, the river in Bukovina, a place called Nova Sulica, or in English, the New Javelin. The three great empire borders met in this same place. Wanting to spend a day in three different empires, the traveler would have gone to the only place on earth where this performance was then possible. The English traveler could have been drinking tea in Russia, coffee in Turkey, and wine in Austria, sitting on a stool with three legs, each leg stuck in another empire. The Romanian Jewish community also has a specific character because of cohabitation of Sephardic and Ashkenazi Jews. The Sephardic Jews spoke Ladino, and by the way, Sephardi is a Hebrew word for Spanish, while the Ashkenazi spoke Yiddish, and Ashkenazi is a Hebrew word for German. Typically, in the south of Romania, the Sephardic communities prevailed, while to the north, Ashkenazi Jews were a majority. The Sephardic Jews were coming from Constantinople, Thessaloniki, Damascus, Cairo, while the Ashkenazi Jews were mostly coming from Galicia, Poland, and they coexisted in the same geographical space with separate community association, kehila, synagogues, ritual bath, and cemeteries. Bucharest even today has two major Jewish cemeteries, a Sephardic one and an Ashkenazi one. Being a product of this culture, I have a set of grandparents in each of the two cemeteries. After the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492 and Portugal in 1497, they were welcomed with open arms in the Ottoman Empire. Not understanding the decision of the kings of Spain and Portugal to let the Jews go, Sultan Bayezid II openly expressed reservations about their intelligence. Sephardic Jews filled southeastern Europe, Athens, Thessaloniki, Sarajevo, Belgrade, Sofia, reaching the southern Romanian space, Timișoara, Bucharest, Constanța. Actually, the first documentary attestation of the Jewish communities in these towns date back to the 16th century and refers specifically to the Sephardic Jews. According to historical commercial acts, we find Jewish communities trading products between Byzantium or Constantinople, Russia and Poland, and crossing the Romanian principalities since the Middle Ages. Jewish historian Halevi places the beginning of important Jewish trade in the area in the middle of the 16th century. During the 18th century, the area was already well connected to the Europe's trading network. There were two main commercial roads, one linking Wallachia to Constantinople, passing through Bosnia and Bulgaria, and another one linking Moldova to Galicia, Silesia, Moravia, and Brandenburg. Nicolae Iorga, a well-known Romanian historian, points to a late 18th century massive migration of Galician Jews into the Romanian principalities, a geographical space at that time with few anti-Jewish laws. And they were leaving Poland due to pogroms and worsening living conditions there. They settled especially in Moldova, having an important role in the commercial transit on the Moldovan road between the Ottoman Empire and Poland, exporting cattle, raw skins, wax, wine, and importing foreign currency and textiles. During the 18th and 19th century, Moldovan nobility followed the same pattern as the Polish aristocracy and invited by royal charter, in Romanian Hrisov Dovnesk, Jewish communities to settle in the Moldovan principality. Privileges granted by landlords favored the multiplication of Jewish settlements in existing Moldovan city and also the establishment of new trading towns, the so-called Târguri. The accession to the Moldovan throne of Stefan Tomșa in 1611 was propitious to the Jews of Moldova. His treaty with Poland assured them entire commercial liberty. And in 1614, he invited the Jews of Lemberg and probably of other places to settle in Moldova. In Wallachia, under the successors of Michael the Brave, the Jews returned to the principality and led a tranquil existence there. But they were far from attaining the number and the importance of the Jews of Moldova. With difficulty, traces of them are found at long intervals during the 17th century. The Greeks and the Armenians, more numerous, monopolized commerce as well as the trades, and the legislation of Matei Basarab bears witness to the inferior condition of the Jews. In Moldova, the reign of Vasile Lupu, or in English, Basil the Wolf, 1634-1653, was favorable to the Jews. Early in his career, Basil the Wolf connected with a Dr. Cohen, who in 1656 was sent by the Turkish Sultan to Moldova in order to facilitate peace negotiations with the King of Sweden. In 1660, Dr. Cohen became personal physician to Basil the Wolf in Constantinople, where the prince lived after his fall from power. The code decreed by Basil the Wolf showed that a considerable degree of protection was accorded to the Jews. He granted facilities to converts, but his high opinion of Jewish physicians made him attach great importance to their testimony. Traders enjoyed perfect security, and the law protected all other equally with the Christians. The insurrection of the Cossacks, however, was a disastrous event to the Moldovans and the Polish Jews. The Cossacks came into Moldova in 1650. They pillaged and sacked and sowed terror among the Jewish population. The Jews of Iași were treated with such cruelty that all must have been perished but for the intervention of the Patriarch of Antioch, who was passing through the city. The Cossacks shut them up in the towers and tortured them night and day in order to make them reveal the place where their treasures were hidden. Even when Cossacks entered Iași as friends, in the train of Timuș, son of Helmitski, who came to marry the daughter of Basil the Wolf in 1652, the Jews were forced to hide themselves, for if the Cossacks caught a Jew, he had to ransom himself. In Valachia, Matei Basarab encouraged the baptism of the Jews and conferred high dignities on converts. One of these was appointed porter of the court, the person who was responsible for the main castle entrance and for the guard rooms. The codes which Matei Basarab decreed in 1640 and 1652 were not so favorable to the Jews. The Jew was treated like a leper, so no one might approach him or come in contact with him or sit with him at the same table or touch the objects with which he touched. The Christian was forbidden to consult a Jewish physician. The testimony of a Jew, except that of a physician, was refused, and his conversion was encouraged. Little is known concerning the situation of the Jews under the successors of Matei Basarab in Valachia. They engage in commerce, in making and selling brandy, and some of them practice medicine. Under Constantin Brâncoveanu, a Jew surnamed the Saltpeter Maker furnished the prince with powder for the army. In Bucharest and probably other cities, the Jews were confined to certain quarters and paid more taxes than any other body of people in the city. They were not compelled to wear a special garb, but the color of their clothes and shoes had to be black, similar in a way to Hasidim clothing today. Although the condition of the Jews in Moldova was better, their religion was not officially recognized. For the erection or rebuilding of a synagogue, they had to obtain special authorization from the prince. The synagogues had to be made of wood and be built on the side streets at a certain distance from the churches. And the Jews paid higher taxes than any other corporation. Nevertheless, they enjoyed commercial and industrial liberty. The Russian and the Polish Jews continually traversed the routes leading across the principalities to Turkey. They traded in cattle, horse, honey, and wine, importing manufactured articles from Germany and also farming large estates. They left the practice of money lending to the Turks and the Greeks. With the beginning of the 18th century, the conditions of the principalities underwent a great change. From the end of the 17th century, the princes became fragile instruments in the hands of the pashas, who appointed and recalled them at will in order to extort as much money as possible from them upon obtaining the throne. To satisfy the increasing desire of the pashas in Constantinople, the prince pressed the people. But when their exactions became unbearable, they were deposed. Often they were transferred from one principality to the other, or after an interval, they were restored to the same throne. Some princes were appointed and deposed six times within a short period of time. It is difficult to follow their actions amid all these changes and to obtain a distinct idea of the situation of the Jews. In April of 1710, the Jews of Neamț in Moldova were accused of ritual murder. This is important because this is the first recorded ritual murder in a long list of these unfortunate events to come. What happened was that some Christians killed a Christian child on Passover Eve and threw the body into the courtyard of the old synagogue. The next day, the people, believing this was the result of a Jewish Passover murder ritual, attacked the Jews, killed five of them, and pillaged without restraint. 22 Jews were imprisoned by the order of the prefect. A Jewish deputation waited on the prince at Iasi. An investigation was made, the charge was found to be false, the Jews were set free and the guilty punished. In 1714, the same false charge was made at Roman in Moldova. Some Poles abducted a Christian girl, a servant in a Jewish house, and the master of the house was arrested. The mob plundered Jewish houses, two Jews were hanged, and the other would not have escaped massacre if Paul had not given information about the rape which led to the finding of the girl. In Valachia, it was the prince himself who arraigned the Jews. Stephen Cantacuzino, in 1714, in order to obtain the people's pardon for his exactions, donned a religious mask and in 1715 caused the synagogue in Bucharest, situated in a retired corner of the city, to be torn down. The Jewish provost was killed in the riot that broke out on the occasion. It was only through great sacrifices that the Jews obtained permission to rebuild the synagogue and resume their religious practices. The successor of Stephen Cantacuzino in Valachia, Nicholas Mavrocordatos, a cultivated and enlightened man, healed the wounds that the Cantacuzino had caused the Jews. He invited to Bucharest a Jewish banker, Celebi Menteș Bali, whom he overwhelmed with favors and accepted from taxation. Nicholas Mavrocordatos was most closely connected with the physician and diplomat Dr. Daniel Fonseca, a Portuguese Sephardic Jew. Dr. Fonseca had been the physician of the Sultan and an intimate friend of the French ambassador at Constantinople. And in 1719, he came to Bucharest as a personal physician to Mavrocordatos. He aided the prince with his counsel, and his influence was so great that it aroused the rancor of the Austrian ambassador at Constantinople. During his reign in Moldova, the same Nicholas Mavrocordatos, who 2 years later will be prince in Valachia, succeeded in keeping the people in check, and he punished the guilty persons who have reopened the question of ritual murder. He was followed by Mihai Rakovica, who succeeded him on the throne in 1716 for the third time, and he was the type of cruel and oppressive ruler, and history marks him as a repugnant personality. In order to extort money from the Jews, he took advantage of the murder of a child by some rascal at Onitskan to accuse the Jews of ritual murder again. The Jew charged with being the author of the crime protested in vain. He was led to Yassi and maltreated and tortured in the presence of the prince. The synagogue was destroyed and the scroll of law burned. Finally, having extorted enormous sum of money from the Jews, Rakovica set his victim free. Under Constantine Mavrocordatos, a relation of Nicholas Mavrocordatos, who occupied the throne of Valachia 4 times and the throne of Moldova 6 times, the Jews led a peaceful existence. He decreed reforms which show his desire to promote the welfare of the lowly and the humble. The charter promulgated by him in Moldova in 1741 granted the Jews the same protection as the rest of the people. Their home were to be protected, and they might settle in all the cities and villages and follow whatever craft or trade they choose. They could also appeal directly to the prince against any injustice. At the same time, they, just like the Turks, could not employ Christian servants under 30 years of age. And Jewish women, just like the Christians, as a matter of fact, might not sell alcohol. Although the terms of the charter were never literally executed, its good effects made themselves felt. The Jews lived in all the city villages and market towns of Moldova, and their activity was visible everywhere. Many went to Hotin at the border of Moldova and Poland with leather belts, embroideries, textile fabrics, and carpets, and brought back furs from Russia. Others exported cattle, saffron, cotton, carpets, dates, and other fruits as far as Breslau and Frankfurt, and imported silver and other merchandise. The Jews were engaged in all the crafts, and also in the cultivation of the land that was in their hands. The wayside inns on the main routes of travel belonged to the Jews, and according to the travelers, there were the only places which offered comfortable quarters. The best houses in the city were those of the Jews, and they were chosen for lodging distinguished guests. The Russo-Turkish War of 1769 brought dangerous times to the Jews of the principalities. After massacring the Jews of Uman in Ukraine, the Cossacks advanced as far as the Balta Castle and demanded that all the Polish Jews who had taken refuge in the castle be handed over to them. When the Turkish garrison refused to give them up, the Cossacks murdered the garrison along with the Jewish population. When the Russian troops entered Moldova, the Russian and Turkish soldiers competed with each other in pillaging. Jews and Christians fled the country. Those who remained endured the maltreatment of the Turkish Janissary, an elite military corps of the Ottoman Empire army. At Botoşan, the rabbi fell a victim to their brutality. In Bucharest, people taking advantage of the disorder introduced by the Turkish army fell upon the Jews in 1770. It was during the Russian occupation that the first anti-Jewish pamphlet appeared in Iași in 1771. It was a Romanian translation of the Opus Aurelium of Samuel Marocanus, one of the most influential anti-Jewish treatises of the Middle Ages. Allegedly translated from the Arabic by the Spanish Dominican Orientalist Alphonsus Bonihominus, the epistle was supposed composed by a Moroccan Jew, Samuel Marocanus, at the beginning of the 11th century, in which he shares with his colleague, Rabbi Isaac, the headmaster of a rabbinical school and of the Jewish synagogue in Subjumeta, Morocco, the thinking which led him to be baptized and convert to Christianity. You can see a picture of the book in the notes attached to this episode. Tranquility was not restored in the principalities until peace was concluded in the Russian-Turkish War in 1774. The Russian-Turkish War started again in 1790, and the Austrians took also part in it. The Russian army took the Ismail town by storm in November 1790 and massacred a great number of Jews, sending others as prisoners into the interior of Russia. The Austrian occupation of Wallachia was disastrous for the Jews. In consequence of the frequent requisitions made for agricultural products, the distilleries, which were almost exclusively in the hands of the Jews, could no longer run, and many Jews were ruined. Commerce stopped, and the traders were heavily burdened with taxes. A special and severe order was given by the authorities of the districts to take a census of the Jews, including even the purveyors for the Austrian Imperial Army, and to impose large taxes upon them. Under Alexander Moruzzi, the Jews of Wallachia experienced all the severities of an oppressive ruler. Moruzzi renewed the privileges of the converted Jews, destroyed the synagogue, which has been reconstructed on one of the principal streets of Bucharest. He forbade the settlement of Jews in Bucharest, and the people, influenced by his acts, became so inflamed against the Jews that he actually was compelled to adopt protective measures for the Jews. At the same time, Moruzzi recognized the services rendered by the Jews engaged in industries. He granted privileges to a Jew by the name of Moses, who was a manufacturer of glassware. He accepted certain artisans from taxation, and he even appointed a Jew to the post of Juvair Jubasha, or head of the jewelry guild. In Moldova, the Jews were subjected to fewer vexations. Nevertheless, Alexander Callimachus in 1796 drove from their shops the Jews that lived close to the main church in Iași under the pretext that they denied the sacred precincts. At Galați, the never-dying accusation of ritual murder was made again in 1797. The Greeks attacked the Jews, beat them up, pillaged their houses, killed four of them, threw others in the Danube, and burned the synagogue with the scrolls of law. The Jews escaped entire destruction only through an old priest who gathered them together and sheltered them in his church. In February 1803, a leaflet attacking Jews and Judaism called Înfruntarea Judovilor, or in English, Confronting the Jews, was published in Iasi. Its author was a converted Jew, Noah Belfer, who had become a monk under the name Neophyte. The leaflet was published with the approval of the metropolitan head of the Church of Moldova, and probably with the consent of the prince as well. It contained the old absurd accusations and slanders and gave silly interpretations to the customs of the Jews. The pamphlet was spread among the people, and at Iasi it provoked mob violence against the Jews, which threatened to become a massacre. Again, you can see a picture of this leaflet in the notes attached to this episode. In December 1806, war broke again out between Russia and Turkey, and the Russian troops occupied again the principalities. As soon as they approached Bucharest, the Prince Ypsilanti left the city. The wealthier of the residents followed his example. Taking advantage of the disorder resulting from these departures, the people fell upon the Jews and give them the choice between baptism and death. They were saved from their terrible plight by the entrance of the Russian troops. The Russian occupation, ill-fated for the Romanians, was still worse for the Jews of the two principalities. They had many vexations to undergo at the hands of the authorities and the army. Commerce was paralyzed, the traders were burdened with taxes, and the Jewish artisans were prevented from working on Christian holidays even at their own homes. After peace was concluded, the simultaneous reigns of John Cardassia in Wallachia and Charles Callimachus in Moldova were marked by the ravages of the plague in both principalities. In Wallachia, Cardassia, needy and avaricious, profited by the calamity to drain money from the Jews while accusing them of filthiness. He forbade them to employ Christian miners as servants or to rent or buy shops in the vicinity of churches. In Moldova, Callimachus, kinder and a bit more disinterested, treated them well, but the ritual murder calumny was repeated at Piatra in 1816. The authorities maltreated the Jews and extorted money from them using plague as a pretext. In 1821, a tremendous storm broke out, bringing mortal terror to the Romanian Jews. It was the period of the Hetaira, the Greek Revolution, when the Greeks thought to free themselves from the Turkish yoke. The Hetairists were undisciplined bands of plunderers who stole, sowed destruction, and pillaged the houses of the Jews. They killed and massacred those whom they met on their march through Piatra, Neamț, Fălticeni, Herța, Focșani, and their route through Moldova and Wallachia was flooded with Jewish blood. These wretches found assistance in the Greek monks of the Moldovan monasteries. The entrance of the Turks put a stop to the carnage, but then the Turks and the Janissaries took their turn at pillaging. The Jews lived in a constant state of dread. Terror reigned in the two countries, especially in Moldova. The well-to-do crossed the border, but the poor wandered about in the forests and in the mountains. In the city of Iasi, at first partially destroyed by conflagrations, was converted into a furnace of living coals before the departure of the Janissaries in August 1822. All the Jewish houses and synagogues were reduced to ashes. The organic law, a charter drawn up in Moldova under the Russian influence, introduced additional restrictions for the Jewish population. Jews were forbidden to inhabit certain streets or districts in the city. Restrictive measures were passed against merchants, peddlers, brokers, and artisans. They were forbidden to rent certain shops or build their synagogues in certain places. The accusation of ritual murder was brought in several places, and riots against the Jews were quite frequent. In spite of the numerous wars, Cossack and Tartar invasions, pests, floods, and periodic famine, the number of Jews in Wallachia and Moldova, especially Moldova, increased. In Wallachia during the 18th century, the number of Jews increased through immigrants from Hungary, Russia, and Turkey. They were traders, or they engaged in all kinds of crafts, tailoring, shoemaking, lace making, working silver, making jewelry, bookbinding, engraving, making pipes, and manufacturing potash and glassware. They joined the guilds of artisans and craftsmen on an equal footing with Christians. They were also the best distillers, and such enjoying certain privileges. They rarely engaged in money changing. The people at large despised and insulted them. Yet they were well received by the boyars, the high dignitaries of the principalities, and even by the princes and the court, at which the artisans, through their skill, succeeded in obtaining exceptional positions, in acquiring privileges, favors, and influence, and exceptions from taxation. In Bucharest, a Jew was appointed Quinji Basha, or Grand Provost of the silversmith. In 1792, a Jew named Elazar was made Juvarju Basha, great provost of the jewelers. There were high positions which confer upon the holders a certain authority and certain judicial powers over all the members of the guild, of which they were the natural defenders. The Jews of Moldova exerted a strict still stronger influence on the social and economic conditions of the country than the Jews of Wallachia. Many villages and towns, like Folticen in Mihailen, were founded or repeopled by them, by the Jews, in 18th century. After obtaining the authorization of the prince, the boyards, that is, the proprietors of estates, generally made an agreement with certain foreign Jewish families, by which these families bound themselves to people of a town for a limited time. Privileges were granted to the founders and their descendants, and the land and the materials for the construction of synagogues and the management of cemeteries were given them at no cost. They were assured the independent administration of their internal affairs, and they took an active share in communal affairs with rights equal to those of the other citizens. As I said, Jews followed all professions and crafts. There were Jewish physicians, surgeons, barbers, midwives, wholesale and retail merchants, bankers, brokers, traders in cattle, grain, tobacco, wine, fruits, skins, and fish, innkeepers, and middlemen. Among the artisans, there were Jewish clockmakers, coopersmiths, workers in hides and furs, hat makers, keepers of coffee houses, shoemakers, tailors, tanners, silversmiths, jewelers, glaziers, engravers, bookbinders, butchers, house painters, masons, drivers, lace makers, bakers, and so on. Among the manufacturers, there were the distillers on large and small scale, manufacturers of liquors, butter, glassware, potash, paper, and textile fabrics. In Wallachia, the artisans were absorbed by the Christian guilds, but in Moldova, Jewish artisans formed independent organizations, each with a provost and council, and they were absorbed only by the great guild called the Jewish Corporation. The organization of the Jews in Romania merits special attention. The internal administration of their affairs did not differ greatly from that from the Jews of Poland, but the same is not true of their representatives before authorities of the country. This bore title borrowed from Poland and Turkey, but they had different functions from those of the Polish and Turkish officials of the same name. The community, the Jewish community, was known to outsiders as the Breslau, or guild. And its most ancient representative was called the starosta, or provost, who by the end of the 16th century acquired the right to represent the community officially before the authorities of the city. The starosta title had been preserved in Wallachia, but in Moldova, since the beginning of the 18th century, the highest position was that of Haham Basha. After 1750, this position was occupied chiefly by rabbis, though its character and function were essentially secular. Haman Basha's authority and influence increased. He was recognized as chief not only by the Jews of Moldova, but by those of Wallachia as well. And this kind of Jewish union was established before the two countries actually became one in through the political union. The Haman Basha was appointed by a princely decree, which had to be renewed with the accession of each prince. He represented the Jews before the prince and the central authorities and was freely admitted to their presence, enjoying many privileges and immunities. Each head of a Jewish family owed Haman Basha an annual sum and a certain sum due him at marriages, divorces, and burials, and also sums due by Jewish butchers for each head of cattle slaughtered. He himself and his near kindred were exempt from taxations on beehives, wine, cattle, and drinks belonging to them, and he owed no tax even to the prince. The decree by which he was appointed invariably contained a reference to important services previously rendered by him to the prince. The Haham Basha had absolute authority in religious questions and very great authority to decide questions in litigation, both civil and criminal. Although the rabbis were nominated by the Fruntashi, or the nobles of the Jewish community, and its members, they had to be recognized and appointed by the Haham Basha, who had the absolute right to revoke their appointment. Though the office of Haham Basha was not hereditary, it remained with some slight interruption in the hands of one family. About 1740, Bezael HaKohen, a distinguished rabbi, brother and or nephew of Naftali HaKohen of Prague, became Haham Basha. And after 1750 or 1752, the office was handed on to his descendants and with some exception did not leave them until 1832. In 1832, the office was abolished because of incapacity of the last incumbent, Isaiah HaKohen. Next week, we will be discussing the Jewish life in Romanian principalities in the 19th century. Until then, be well.